Well, welcome back to the Connect podcast, and it is an exciting day. I hope you had a good 4th of July and celebration with friends and family. But today we are joined with at the Connect podcast with Kip and Kip Elsie and April Briette. And we, and in the background, we have some children here. First time in the studio, children here. But we are so thankful for you. And I am very, very excited for people to hear your story and what God has done in the last 6 months, actually a little longer than that, of your lives. And so I just wanted to ask you, tell me about your family.
Well, we have three children. We have Liam, who's going to be 6, and then we have Sterling, who is almost 20 months, and then we have a little girl finally, and her name is Mireille, and she is almost 6 months.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, Kip, tell me, what do you do for a living? Kip?
I own a auto glass company.
Okay.
So I do windshield replacements and door glasses and back glasses and stuff.
Okay. Do you want to give the name of it? This is a great advertising right here.
I guess so. It's Spartan Auto Glass.
Spartan Auto Glass?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
And no, I'm not a Michigan Spartans fan. It's just I like the work ethic that the Spartans brought to the table when they were, you know, so.
Very good.
I like the history of the Spartans, so.
And I understand you've been in that kind of work for quite some time.
21 years.
21 years, so. And April?
I'm a dental assistant.
Dental assistant,
yes.
Yeah.
I work with teeth.
Well, and where do you do that?
I'm at Dr. Peter March in Piatone at March Family Dental Care.
Okay, yes. Wonderful. And you guys have been attending River Valley Christian mm-hmm. Fellowship for a while, but how long?
Well, I myself, personally, I started a few years back, probably about 5-6 years ago, I started attending when looking for a new church. I had two friends that were looking for other churches slightly before I did, and they kept telling me about this amazing church that they stumbled upon first time they went to a church to looking for a new church. And, hey, if you're looking, come check this place out. Come check it out. It's amazing. It's amazing. So I was like, all right, well, one Sunday morning, I decided to come check you guys out, and I haven't gone anywhere since then. I enjoy coming here and listening to you talk. I think you're a great speaker. And I've really enjoyed being part of it, how welcoming everyone is here, and how amazing everyone is. It's something I wasn't used to growing up Lutheran, where, you know, not to bash anything, I don't mean to be doing that.
Sure.
But, yeah, it's just, you know, like, structured Lutherans and Catholics, how, you know, you abide by certain things or whatever, but it's not like it's looser here, it's just more friendlier here, where you praise more of being happy that the Lord saved us rather than, you know, having us repeating for our sins, I guess, basically. You know, we're excited to come to church and hear about the good word.
All right. Now, I didn't invite Kip for that outstanding recommendation today. But,
he practiced
but
it.
But I'll take it. I will take it. Yeah. I was about to say, they said it was so amazing. You came your first Sunday and said, yeah, what are you guys talking about?
Oh,
you
no.
came to the wrong church, right?
Oh, no. Your message hit
a
home
lot of amazing
instantly.
Churches.
Yeah. So I can't remember. I remember the message actually for a couple of years what it was. And it's just kind of, haven't thought about it, so it kind of went wayside for me, but it stuck with me for a while, that first service I showed up to. So it felt like it spoke to me at the time.
Wow.
So
well, we're glad you found us, Kip, and your friends who invited you.
Brad and Amanda Morkel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wonderful family. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Wonderful family. Love Brad and Amanda and their boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Three boys.
Three boys now.
Amazing. Yeah, incredible. It's incredible. Yes. But yeah, I'm glad they invited you, and you came, and April?
When did well, I think when we moved down here, we were searching for a church, and, you know, I was like, let's find something that's convenient, that's kind of close. So I think we had tried another church that was in our town, and it just, we didn't connect to it all. We both kind of left, and we're like, nope, that's not the church for us. And then he kept saying, you know, there's this amazing church, let's go try it out. You know, Brad and Amanda go there. So I was like, okay, let's go try it out. And the same thing that he said, like, we went to one service, and I was like, this is home. This is it. And it was just history after that. So I thank him for introducing this church to us.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful. We love when people describe the church as home
mm-hmm.
because then it feels like family. You know, it feels close, and And we love that God directs us. God directs us to different places at different times, different seasons of our lives. There are a lot of great churches in town. Love the fact that we have wonderful churches around our county. But I love it when God directs people here to be part of our church family. And for you guys to come, you usually attend the South venue. Yes. When you come, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. And we're sitting in the South venue, which just kind of feels a little weird, doesn't it? I mean, it's...
Yeah. It's quiet.
Yeah, it's quiet. I always tell people, when we do record these podcasts, this is kind of the most soundproof place we've got in the whole building. But to look at these empty chairs and to think about the last few months being separated.
Yeah.
And we had to cancel the services Sunday because it was too hot outside to hold them. But, we're prayerfully hoping that soon we'll be able to meet in person inside where there's actual air conditioning.
Yes.
or by the time we do meet inside, there'll be heat. Yes. But nonetheless, we're very thankful for you and for the fact that you guys came to share your story. Because you've both used the word amazing as it relates to our church, which I'm grateful for. I'm glad you feel that way. But at the same time, you guys have experienced something personally that is beyond the description of amazing. And I want you to share that story with us. So take me back to last year. And April, you became pregnant. Mm-hmm. And then at what point in the pregnancy did you realize and hear that there was a problem?
So I wanted to share with Kip that we were expecting our third. I did it on Father's Day last year, and I came up with a little clue game, and I remember I put, I think, seed in there. I put the number 5. I think I put February, and he still had no clue with these clues as to, what is this gift that she's given me?
She's like, awesome, I got some seeds. Hooray!
So when we finally announced to him, he was excited. We were excited, a little nervous because of the time Sterling was only maybe
he was just over a year old. Yeah, when I was 14 months old.
Yeah. But over in general, we were just really excited. So it was a pretty normal pregnancy. I was tired, a little cranky, the normal, I think. And then, the weeks kind of went on, and I think it was around 20 weeks. Some family and some friends would say, "Oh, have you felt the baby move?" And I said, "No, not yet. I'm not too concerned." I didn't feel really a lot of movement with the boys until around 21, 22 weeks. But so many people had just put so many things into my head that I started actually doubting, okay, maybe I need to go in just to make sure everything is okay because I'm not feeling anything. So I actually went into Riverside Labor and Delivery just for a fetus check and a heartbeat check. So we kind of went in, and, they were having a hard time finding a heartbeat at first. So we started to get a little nervous about that. And then they actually did an ultrasound. And they were like, "Oh, there's a heartbeat." So we're like, "Great." It was very quiet in the room. The nurses and the ultrasound lady wasn't really saying much to us. And then she pretty much just said, "A doctor will be in soon." We waited a little bit before she came in. And then when she came in, she said that there was no fluid, and basically said that that was not good. She said at this point of the pregnancy, there should have been around probably 4 or 5 ounces of fluid, and I had 0.
And you know how important fluid is for a baby's development inside the womb, for the lungs,
that's
movement
right.
in the joints and everything like that.
So they said they wanted to send us down south to see a maternal fetal specialist and kind of figure out what was going on. So I think it was probably the next week we drove down south, and we went to the appointment, and, of course, I had Googled a couple things as to, what could it possibly be. So I just thought maybe I wasn't drinking a lot of water. So for that next week, I was just drinking tons and tons of water, thinking that's probably all it is. And then when we get there, you know, they did the routine ultrasound, looking at everything, examining everything. And I remember the nurse said, oh, I see a teeny, teeny, tiny bit of fluid. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, that's something, okay. And then the doctor pretty much brought us into another pretty small room and sat down with us and just said that the baby had no kidneys. And basically just said that, you know, you're more than welcome to continue the pregnancy. You'll probably go into early labor. You might have to be put on bed rest. And then if you continue the pregnancy, most likely the child will be stillborn or the baby is going to suffocate right at birth because there's no fluid. It won't be able to breathe. Basically, the baby would die because, you know, you can't survive without a kidney. And I just remember just sitting there with like a straight face. I didn't have a lot of emotion. I just kept thinking of another friend who went through, you know, something not similar, but where she was told that, you know, her baby had a 1% chance of survival. And, you know, then he also said that, you know, termination is an option as well. I can give you a referral if you decide to go that route. And I just remember saying, I wanted a second opinion. I wanted to hear from somebody else kind of what was going on. And then he gave us we went and saw a second opinion. He gave us a referral to go up north to see somebody else. And then we get to a clinic in Chicago. And it was a female this time, and, you know, they did the whole routine ultrasound again, and she's kind of sat next to us and said, you know, I see one kidney. So in my head, I'm thinking, okay, great, you know, one kidney is all you need, you know. But she kind of shied away from wanting to continue the pregnancy. She pretty much talked to us a lot about, you know, termination and, you know, you're going to be stuck in the hospital a lot and you have smaller kids. Maybe that's not the lifestyle that you're going to want. And
she was basing the termination, part of her counsel was based on your own inconvenience.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. And she really was doing everything she could to talk us into terminating the pregnancy.
Kip, what are you thinking through all of this? I mean, you know, you first hear it at the first doctor that this is actually 0% chance of survival. What's going through your head at that time?
I was just kind of thinking about the termination of it and like the long term, like not wanting to, you know, have the baby die in her womb and put her health at risk. You know, I was like, well, whatever she wants to do, I'm going to back her 100%. And yeah, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of bought into the whole fact that should terminate the pregnancy, I guess, at this point. Unlike April, she never once did she lose faith to want to, she wanted to make sure she was going to keep going on with it. As for me, it was just kind of just listening to what everyone had to say and just kind of more in shock with everything.
So after you get this counsel from the hospital up north, what's going through your mind at that point, April?
I was kind of all over the place. When we left, I kind of was like, okay, you know, I've heard it from two doctors said, don't continue the pregnancy. You know, if you had another one, you know, it probably would be a normal pregnancy. So in my head, I was kind of like, okay, well, that's what we're going to do, and we're going to get it set up. And then, you know, our drive from Chicago home was a long drive. So, of course, I started thinking, and I'm Googling, like, you know, transplant and how would a baby survive and how does it work. And my brain just started going from I left feeling one way to by the time I got home, I was like, I just don't think I can do it. I don't think I have that in me to make that decision. And then I had spoken with a friend who just said, you know, before you make a decision, just see one more person, because you had two different opinions. So maybe if you see a third one, that third one can kind of tell you which way to go. So I said, okay, I will do one more. I mean, it was exhausting. I'll do one more visit with a specialist and kind of go from there. So then we went and saw a third specialist in Hinsdale, and was a little bit excited to see him because I heard so many good things about him, and I heard his bedside manner was really, really great. So kind of went in with, tell us how it is, tell us what's going on. So he came in and pretty much said, I don't see any kidneys as well. I'm not finding them. But I do see that the baby's bladder is full. So it makes me think that there has to be a kidney in there somewhere. I just can't find it. He pretty much just said that he was a very hopeful person, that he was pro-life. He didn't stop believing or having faith and hope until there was none left. So he, you could tell he was totally, if you want to continue this, I'm going to be here for you. I'm going to guide you through this. And what the outcome will be the outcome. So I pretty much kind of looked at Kip and said, what do you want to do? I mean, he kind of already knew how I was really feeling, but I just needed him to want to be on the same page during this
journey. Talking with Dr. Meyer, that I was completely sold in on the fact that we need to keep her. We need to keep the baby. I mean, it was her at the time, but we need to keep the baby. And continue on with it. And so I told Dr. Meyer, I said, well, I want whatever April wants, and April's not wanting to terminate this pregnancy. She wants to go on with it, so that's what we're going to do, I think. So that was, and after that, it was just never once looked back and just tried to be as supportive as I could for her because, you know, April's a troop. She's unbelievable. Okay, guys, like her, the strength this woman has, it's uplifting just to see someone the way she is and how determined she is. It's completely changes everything you ever imagine about stuff because she just makes you look at things differently because of how upbeat and how positive and how strong she can be about something. You know, she sees the better part of it. You know, she tells me I'm too negative, and she's right. I am, and she's amazing. Sorry.
Yeah.
I told him to say that.
Hey, good job, Kip. Following directions.
It's the only time I ever listened, right?
So this, you know, was this doctor recommended to you by the friend?
Yes.
Okay, so your friend, whose family attends here to River Valley, was given, that little boy was given a 1% chance of survival, right? And he was born, and he is doing phenomenal.
Yeah, I think he's 2 now. He's amazing.
2 years old. Mm-hmm. I met him. Mm-hmm. His family brought him one Sunday. I've got to meet him actually a couple times. I've seen him, and that was a miracle. Mm-hmm. Just an incredible story. But for you to have a friend who had also not the same thing, but to say, look, I know a doctor. You know, this is our story, this is your experience, and this has been our experience with what's happened to us, and to encourage you in that direction, to say, get that third opinion and go to this particular person. Mm-hmm. I mean, after the fact, don't you see how God orchestrated?
Absolutely. I mean, I say all the time, I'm so blessed for her, because I think if I and we did not know her story, we probably would have been like, okay, let's go with what the doctors are saying, you know. But her story, for me, was so empowering that she went through something similar. And I guess I felt like, gosh, if her son can get through it, if she can do it, I can do it too. I could just try to get through this too, you know. So, yeah, her story really inspired us a lot.
Yeah, amazing. Well, so, April, you shared with me earlier that there was a moment that you had an encounter with God in this whole process that inspired you, and I know did Kip as well. Tell us about that experience. There's something that's hanging a prayer, right, that's hanging in your home. And you you were just, you know, we know that you were led by the Spirit to pray this prayer. But it was there. It's been there. It was there all the time, right, through the whole, this whole process.
So I got this, it's like a cross decor for a wall, and I got it actually as a gift when Sterling was going to be born. So it's been around our house for a while, and, you know, we'll briefly just pass it and read it here and there. But even leaving Dr. Meyer's office, you know, a couple days later, you know, once you're alone and you don't have that positive energy from another doctor, I started having doubts again where I'm like, gosh, do I want to do this? Is this going to be really challenging? Is this going to be hard? So at one point, even though I said I wanted to continue it, I still was doubting and wondering, was this the right decision? And I remember one of the doctors said, you know, at some point you might not feel any movement, and that could just be maybe the baby is going to pass away because of no kidneys. So I remember it was about 24 hours. I had not felt any movement, and I started getting pretty nervous and started just thinking this was just it. So maybe going towards the termination route was the best route to go. And, you know, I really had a moment where talking to people and talking to family members, it wasn't enough to really decide what to do. And I was actually kind of torn to the point that it was stressing me out because I didn't know what the right decision was. And we have this message in our house, and I literally just got on the floor and I just prayed and I said, God, I don't know what to do right now. I need you to give me a sign. I need you to tell me what to do. Which way is the right way to go? Just please just give me something. And I have this message that I want to read because this is what I read when I was asking God, what do I do? And it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Do not depend on your own understanding. Seek his will in all you do, and he will direct your paths. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Faith is the confidence that we hope for will actually happen. It gives us assurance about things we cannot see, and it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. Jesus looked at them and asked, with man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. And as I read that, it was probably seconds later, I felt the baby move. And it was just like this moment of like, I just smiled and I was like, that was him. That was him talking to me, telling me, you have to continue this. It was just a moment that I'll never forget it. It was amazing.
Yeah, because sometimes those moments, you know, sometimes people are looking for the postcard in the mail or something written in the sky. And God is really, I mean, what he gave us was his word. What you read in this prayer is it comes from his word. It's his revealed will for us, you know. So he's given us the sign of his word that we can look at and it gives us, I mean, just reading those words, because that comes from various scriptures, right, throughout the Bible, various verses, and yet they all spoke, every one of those spoke to your situation. And it is so true that many times when we look for, you know, when we're trying to discern, we can look to the scriptures, we can look to the Bible and say, God has revealed this, he's given us the sign of his revelation to us and his word that we can look and we can find hope and we can find meaning. And it also gives us that the ability to trust. Really, really, God gives us the ability to trust. You know, the faith that you have is not manufactured. You know, Kip, you did such a great job bragging on April earlier. But, you know, really, I mean, and she could do the same for you, and I know she does, but the reality is what we're seeing in each other is not so much anything that we have done. It's really, this is from God. This is from the Holy Spirit. When we see faith in each other and when we see strength in each other, this is really not something we can do on our own. This is something that God, by His Spirit, is giving and providing us. And it's just, it is amazing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Kip, it's so true. It's so true. You know, keep looking, keep holding out hope. Keep your eyes wide open to what God, because sometimes it's not that God is going to show you something new. He might show you something that's been there all along that you did not see, you know. And so it is different, isn't it? Sometimes from God works mysterious. That's why, you know, I love when Nicodemus comes to Jesus at night and Jesus is explaining what it means to be born again. And he says the Spirit is like the wind, you know. He comes unexpectedly and he moves and mysteriously, and we just like the wind, we just don't know. Sometimes we can't sometimes discern his work and when it's going to come and when we're going to be filled up with trust and faith and hope. And but he's faithful. Like you say, he's faithful to bring that hope and that peace and that faithfulness into our lives when we most need it. And too often we give up too soon, right? We give up too soon and we give up too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I have a perfect example. I was willing to give up way sooner than I should have. I didn't put that, my trust wasn't in the Lord at that time. It was in medicine. And the Lord proved us wrong, and he continues to prove us wrong every day with her. So don't give up hope, guys. Don't do that. I made a huge mistake. And it's not like I was wanting to do it, but my mind was going in the wrong direction with it all. So don't give up faith or hope. Don't allow that to happen.
Amen. Amen. Mm-hmm. We got to get to the... Oh, okay.
We get to the good stuff.
Yeah, because everybody knows it's coming, right? Everybody knows, where this is headed. So tell me, okay, so you prayed this prayer. You felt her move. And it was confirmation and affirmation that your trust is not being misplaced here. And he's with you. It was affirmation that God was in this with you. He wasn't apart. He's not distant. He's not absent. Even though sometimes God can feel absent from our lives, yet he's always there.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gave you this moment as affirmation that, April, I'm here. I'm with you. You just got to trust me. So what, tell me then after that.
So another thing that, you know, before we had a third, we'd always prayed. I was like, oh, we want a girl. We want a girl. We want a girl. So after we decided to continue the pregnancy, they said, just to make sure there's not going to be any more bumps ahead of us or anything at the delivery, we need to do a genetic testing just to make sure that there's nothing else we're missing. So we went in, we did the genetic testing as well, and they called about a week later to go over the results, and they called me at work. And I remember just being so nervous. My heart was beating because I'm like, oh my gosh, please just let there not be anything else that we need to be concerned about. And she said, it was the genetic counselor, and she called and said, you know, everything looks great. You know, nothing to be concerned about. Your baby's pretty much healthy, other than the other issue we had known about, which was no kidneys. And then she said, do you want to know the sex? And I just remember thinking, we didn't want to know, but we also wanted to know, you know, what are we fighting for? Is it a boy or is it a girl, you know? And
oh, you would have made a difference, but still.
Exactly. but then she said it's a little girl. And I just remember just crying, just sobbing, because we had prayed, probably more me than him, prayed and prayed for a girl. And I was just like, gosh, is that just another thing that God was like, I hear your prayers. I hear you all the time. I just need you to just stay with me. and let me direct you. And I was like, gosh, he's telling me to continue this pregnancy because it's a little girl that we had prayed for. So it was just another aha moment where I was like, oh my gosh, just cried and cried and cried. And it was just amazing to know that, like, oh my gosh, there's a girl and we're going to fight for her. And so then after that, we saw the specialist every couple weeks. I did steroid shots just to help with the lung development. And we sat down with the NICU team, the NICU doctors, around 30 weeks, I think. And I remember we kind of went in and they had talked about, you know, we're really worried, you know, because there's basically no fluid in there, how are their lungs developing, and kind of told us, like, what we could expect at delivery or what else we could expect at delivery. Just kind of preparing us for a date. We kind of initially started talking about, like, you know, you probably won't get to 40 weeks. It's not safe. I do remember around 28 weeks, started to get a tiny bit of fluid in there. There wasn't a lot. So that was another thing that, you know, Dr. Meyer was pretty excited about, that, like, okay, if there's a little bit of fluid in there, maybe your baby has a kidney. So that was kind of inspiring to kind of keep going, and we'll see kind of where things go.
We found the fluid, a little bitty pocket of fluid, which was exciting because there's behind, you know, the medical eyes, there shouldn't be any fluid, no kidneys. You know, they still couldn't really find a kidney. They thought what they could find might have been a kidney, but they weren't sure because it wasn't in the right spot. So they didn't really know. So they found that little pocket of fluid, so it was pretty exciting too to hear that. You know, it wasn't much, but it was still enough. But the best part about that was that little pocket of fluid was developed around her mouth. So that was very uplifting to hear, and it was great. So then we started, you know, continued on with going to see Dr. Myers, and of course, you know, throughout this whole time, you know, asking friends and family who we told about the situation, you know, to keep her in her prayers and thoughts. You know, we weren't telling a whole bunch of people because we didn't know exactly, you know, the outcome of it. But then as the weeks went on, continuing going through, you know, the pocket got slightly bigger with fluid and it stole right around her mouth area, right where it needed to be. You know, so they're like, well, we stole, you know, that's great. And you can, and when doing the ultrasound, you could see her sucking the water in and out, in and out, in and out. So it showed that she was making the breathing motion. So that right there was enough to be like, man, we did make the right decision here. This is going to be fantastic. This is going to be great. You know, still the mystery of, you know, how are the lungs really going to be. But we continued on with going to the doctor. And, you know, you developed the flu. Kind of, was it the flu?
I got the flu. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the flu. So she was running like my medium grade temp or so or whatever. And you started getting contractions. And the doctor went in for a normal checkup. And they decided, and she told the doctors what was going on. So they had us go to the delivery room so they could do an ultrasound and check. And the whole time, she never once had a contraction. Not once during the whole time. So they're like, all right, well, we're just going to, you know, send you to your next, or send you on home or whatever, since we already did the ultrasound, checked everything, it was fine. And then the OB said, well, then let me just check you to make sure, see how the dilation is or whatever. And she checked her and was like, oh, well, this baby's coming today. So like, okay. So at that point, it was went from just a normal checkup, we were going to be going home, to, well, nope, she's wanting to join this world today. So they prepped April for an emergency C-section. They had informed the NICU, got all the NICU people ready and everything for it, and sent us down to the delivery room then.
So we go in for the C-section, and, you know, at this point I'm just so sick that I didn't really have a lot of thoughts. I remember they're kind of talking, and I could hear another doctor working with my OB saying, oh, there's no fluid in there, and, you know, kind of getting that other doctor kind of up to date as to what was going on really quickly. And then, you know, we're just kind of sitting around waiting, and then we heard her scream and cry, and it was probably the most beautiful sound I had ever heard, because it's like, oh my gosh, she's crying.
Yeah.
She's crying. And, you know, they kind of come around the curtain, and, you know, she's a little tiny ball. She's 4 pounds, 14 ounces, and 16 inches. So she's just this little, little tiny ball, and she's looking around, and she had a full set of hair, dark, beautiful hair. And, you know,
the lungs were working.
Yes, her lungs were working.
And we were fortunate enough to where she didn't develop a hole or anything in her lungs while trying to incubate her, get her, you know, breathing.
Yeah.
So, but they did have to, you know, chest tube to get her to breathe or whatever. But it's
She went into you know, respiratory distress pretty quickly. So she was on oxygen for right away, it was 100%. And she was on that for a couple of weeks, you know, as those lungs were still maturing. But they pretty much took her straight to the NICU. Then I went to the post-op room, and I was there for a few hours. While they took her, they did blood work. They did an ultrasound to find out, does she have kidneys? I think we waited maybe about 6-7 hours.
Yeah.
I think they kind of told us around 9:30 at night. You know, he came back into the room, and, you know, Kip's crying, and I'm thinking, oh, just why is he crying? Is it a happy news or is it a bad news, you know? And then the nurse kind of sat down next to me and just said that your daughter does, in fact, have 2 kidneys. And
wow.
She said, you know, they're small and underdeveloped, but they're there.
And so those kidneys that no doctor could find or see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Had been there all along.
All along. Yeah. And they, I think they took her the next morning. They sent her to Comer's in Chicago.
Yeah, they airlifted her after, because her acid levels were getting higher than they would have liked. And it was the next day they decided that, well, it was time to send her to Comer's, which is something we were prepared for, because throughout the whole going to see Dr. Myers, they told us about, you know, well, if she does have kidneys, she's going to need dialysis probably. We don't know how soon she'll need dialysis. But, yeah, she's going to need dialysis until she's old enough to get a new kidney. So the whole time, you know, we're going through all these doctor appointments, you know, we're talking, you know, prepping for when she had to go. So we knew, you know, she was going to have to go to Comer's because they weren't prepared to do it up at Hinsdale. At that point, a snowstorm had come through in January. So, but because they're originally going to airlift her, and then they ended up having to send an ambulance. So we had to wait a little bit longer for the ambulance to get there, which was the hardest thing for me at that point than watching them getting her ready to send her off. Knowing that we wouldn't be by her right away for, you know, a day or two or so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just watching them do everything. And, you know, of course, you know, the bed, a big scary bed they bring in, but it's just to keep her safe. And, you know, just a mobile, you know, incubating bed, basically.
Right.
You know, but it was just, you know, not being from medical professions and just a layman moron, just seeing this stuff like, my gosh, what's going on? They're going to turn her into a robot. You know, so I was, like, pretty much freaking out. And then they got her. Mary loaded up and sent off. And I, you know, got to see her off and then went back upstairs to be with April for a little bit. I then went up to Comer's to see how everything was going and checking everything and signed papers. And, you know, at that point up there, they were telling me, Dr. Hajmat, the nephrologist, you know, she was like, yeah, she's going to need dialysis. You know, she was telling me all the scenarios about what could be wrong with her, what could happen, you know, because of, A, her being born premature, which wasn't extremely premature, but still premature, and the fact that the kidney disease, you know, not providing the blood cells, red blood cells, properly needed to get her to, you know, grow where she's probably going to be smaller than other kids. She's not going to want to eat and this, that, and the other, and getting us ready. Like, well, they're already talking about doing a G-tube for feeding, the catheter, you know, getting all that put in, which they wanted to wait till she got a little bigger, though, because they got her number stabilized, so they're going to wait, put off doing all that stuff. And the whole time, just her numbers just keep getting better and better, and they just want to keep putting stuff off a little bit longer because her body's telling them, well, maybe I don't need this, and I'm going to show you I don't need this. The whole time, she's just been, well, you guys are saying one thing, I'm going to do the other thing. So I'm not sure how this is going to work out when she's a teenager. Because right now, it's just, oh, you do one thing. Oh, you want me to do this? Oh, heck no, I'm going to do it this way instead. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how she is with that. But the whole time, you know, doctors, they've, even now, they're like, they're expecting something else out of her. And she's just like, her and God are just like, no, we're going to do something different. But they just put the G-tube in and the catheter, and we started doing bottle feeding, which she would take a little bit, but then we'd have to finish the rest of the G-tube. You know, and over time, she's developing, you know, drinking more. But as she's gotten older, the doctors, the nephrologist has told April, it's like, well, everything we thought and expected from her from a medical standpoint, she has completely proven us wrong. We've changed our train of thought on everything. Our plan to go forward is completely different now. You know, before we were saying, as soon as she's, you know, 25 pounds, we need to find a kidney. Need to find a kidney. You know, as soon as she's big enough, kidney. You know, dialysis. We're going to have to be doing dialysis. Now we took the dialysis catheter out. They took it out. She doesn't need dialysis right now. And her numbers are so good that they're thinking, well, if she ever does need dialysis, she may never need it, or she may need it. But if she does, she's got plenty of time to be able to get in there, and they can, you know, put everything in there and get it ready for when she does need it. So she's just been proving them all wrong in their train of thought. The whole medical field is just, they're baffled by it, and they love
it's
it.
Incredible.
But everything they thought to be true, she's proven them wrong.
Provider that we meet will tell us, you know, in fact, she's a miracle. And we say, yeah, we know. Yeah. Like they said, we can't even believe that she had basically no fluid the whole pregnancy, and she was breathing on her own after 4 weeks. Like, just, she's unbelievable.
Yeah. And they say she's like one in a million.
Pretty much.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or more.
Maybe more, yeah.
Yeah, maybe more. Because they had never in their lifetimes, in their medical professions, seen this take place before.
No.
And they don't really expect to see it again.
And that's funny because I just saw my OB for a post-op a couple months ago, and she said that at the time, there was, you know, they do study cases for continue education, and they were studying her case, you know, just like, if this was ever to happen again, how do we move forward? And she looked me straight in the face and said, but there will never be a case like this ever again. Like, your child was a rare 1% chance that this story will ever be told again. She's like, but we're studying it just in case that 1% comes up ever again.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so, and she's right here.
Yes, she is.
She's right here. No
yes,
one can see her, but we can see her.
Yes.
And she is wonderfully lovely.
She is.
As well as her name.
Yes.
So tell me about her name. Her name is Mireille.
Yes.
And I have never heard any baby named Mireille before. Maybe you guys haven't either. I certainly haven't never heard it. But tell me about how you came to that name.
So we said that if we had a girl, we were going to name our girl Penelope. And then once we kind of found out what was going on, you know, I remember telling Kip, I said, I think we need to find something that has a meaning, that'll be more meaningful. And he said he agreed. So, you know, I had Googled, you know, hope and faith and joy and grace. Just none of those names were like, you know. So I thought, okay, I'll Google miracle. Let's see what would come up, because, you know, if she survived, it's a miracle. And the first name that came up was Mireille, and it means miracle. It's French. And I asked Kip, I said, do you like that name? And he was like, yeah, that's the name. And after that, I was like, okay, we're done searching, and that's going to be her name. And we don't know anyone named Mireille. And, you know, when we tell people her name, they say, oh, that's such a beautiful name. How did you find it? And we give them a very short version of her story, and wow, that's amazing. What a beautiful name. And it's very fitting. It's like that was meant to be her name, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. She is the miracle. She is Mireille. Yeah. I want us to just think about the people who are listening right now that may, they may not have an exact similar situation as what you both were going through, but they may have a situation where they're in a similar place where they're trying to discern which way do we go? What do I do? Trying to discern the will of God and having a difficulty. Maybe they're also hearing counsel and voices from different directions that maybe is causing confusion. How would you counsel someone like that to say, don't give up hope, but trust in the Lord. Well, how would you counsel someone who is at that kind of crossroads? What would you counsel them to do?
Pretty basically just what you just said, just don't give up hope. Trust that God's going to give you the sign. It may just be a minor sign, or it may be something huge. Just never stray away from knowing that God's going to give you the sign and the strength, and he's not going to give you anything that you're not going to be able to handle. He's, you know, we've been told that our entire lives growing up. God doesn't give you anything you can't handle, and he'll always be there for you no matter what. It may not seem like he's there or listening, but he is. In his own subtle way, he's going to tell you something or do something for you. Look for the signs that are going to make you feel better about your situation, yourself, and how which way you think is the best direction to go. Just and trust that God's going to teach you and show you. You know, just look for that. Just keep your eyes wide open for it.
You know, and like you said before in some of your services, you know, God doesn't always give us what we want. He doesn't just magically say, oh, this is what you want, I'm going to give it to you. Sometimes if he doesn't give it to us, it's because that's not what he wants for us. So we have to just, again, be positive and say, he has a plan for us. He's planned out everything for us. We just need to just be positive and let him show us the way. And I think if you just start with those, like, your whole life can just change in a matter of days, weeks, months, you know?
It's wonderful. It's wonderful. We've been doing this series called Life with God, and what you just described, April, is that's what he desires for all of us, that we have a life for him. That's what he's created us to be and to do, is to live life with him. And we do that through prayer. We do that through reading the scriptures, as you read, as you pray, because you were praying the scriptures. Mm-hmm. It was on a cross, yes, on a decor piece in your house, mm-hmm, but it was the scripture. You were praying out the scripture. I think this is what many times we fail to realize, that when God is Father, when he's truly Father, there's a relationship that he invites us into that's intimate, it's close, it's relational. He's not a God that needs to be appeased. Because you mentioned that you felt like, uh-oh, I'm being punished for, mm-hmm, something.
I did.
I'm being punished for something, and therefore, you know, this is the consequence. But God's Father.
Mm-hmm.
So he does discipline those he loves, but he doesn't cause these things in this way. He invites us into relationship. He wants those that time with us. And I'm so grateful that you came to share your story and for me to get to see Mireille here again.
Yes.
And we look forward to the day that when we can be together as a church family inside the building, that we can share her dedication,
yes,
with her church family.
Absolutely.
And we look forward to that day very much. So thanks again, April, Kip.
Thanks for
coming
in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. And sharing your story. And look, if you're listening today, keep trusting in the Lord. He invites you into this trust with him as your Father. If you don't know him as Father, you need to know his Son, Jesus, who came to die, to rise again, to pay the penalty for our sin, that we may enter into a relationship and be reconciled to him. And so we trust that you'll put your faith and trust in his Son, Jesus Christ, and you will know him intimately, relationally as Father, so that when you're in these moments that you can just bow your heart and your life to him. And we're so grateful for the Lord who draws us into himself in these times. So God bless you guys, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Yes.
And thanks again for joining us. For those of you listening to the Connect Podcast, thank you for listening today. We will see you again next Thursday.